News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
He's going to be joined by a third voice for about a half hour or so, and it's Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner joining us on the phone this morning. Quinn, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
So a lot to get into, but we want to start local here with you, Quinn, and a campaign that's been going on for quite a while to raise money to keep Heart of Mary, the school that's been in Mobile for so long, to keep it running, a historically black Catholic school. Carlos Finley, the mayoral candidate and judge in Mobile for such a long time, he I think kind of kickstarted this thing, even though it was on GoFundMe, not to confuse the two sites there. But they raised a ton of money, Quinn, over $450,000. But apparently, that may not have been enough to revive the school.
Well, yeah, and there's a wonderful story about this cover story at Lagniappe this week, the one that came out last Wednesday by Dale Leash. This boggles the mind. Okay, first of all, this is a school that's been around 120 years. Catholic school, downtown, largely economically underprivileged community. And they have been having trouble staying open. But it's got a phenomenally impressive list of graduates. They include Alexis Herman, who is Labor Secretary, General Gary Cooper, who is a retired Marine general who is active in many causes around Mobile,
legendary, and others. Yeah, legendary guy.
And anyway, so General Cooper and Carlos Finley and others have led this drive. They said we need $350,000. To keep the school going for another year, and then we also want to give it some long-term sustainability. And in 1 month, they didn't raise just $350,000. They raised $450,000. Tremendously successful, great response from the community, and some real national interest, too, and possibly partnering with some national entities to give it really good long-term stability. So this sounds like, okay, great story. Community comes together, this little school punching above its weight, does wonderful things. What a wonderful thing that the Archdiocese can brag about, right?
Well, right.
Instead, just as they're going to the scheduled board meeting that Carlos Finley and others hope that is going to reverse its decision and decide to keep the school open now that they've raised all this money, they get an email saying the board meeting has been canceled, and please read this letter from Archbishop Rohde. And the letter basically assumes that they have failed already. And it says, well, you gave it a valiant effort, but it's a shame you weren't able to recruit more students, et cetera, to which Carlos Finley said, but wait a minute. We've also been doing a recruiting drive, and we already have more students ready to come next year than we're here this year, and we're just getting started, because once the word gets out that we have the money, we'll do even better. So Carlos Finley says they're not giving up. They're going to still try to convince the Archbishop to keep it open, and I'm like, why not keep it open? This is a gem in the diadem of the Archdiocese of Mobile and of the city of Mobile in general. And it's, when you're going in and serving a community that doesn't have a lot of options, you're doing particularly important educational work. And I can talk about a lot of experience I've had with that, but I've sort of filibustered now, so I want to stop, see if you all have any questions.
Yeah, I've got a question. So when did the Archdiocese make this decision that the school was going to close? Is the school operational right now, this school year?
Yeah, the school is going on this school year, and they've had to struggle like everybody else the last couple of years because of COVID, and for a while the students couldn't go to class, and then there was all this uncertainty about whether it would open whether it would stay open next year or not, but it has been open. It's going right now, but the idea was they were going to close it at the end of this year. Hence the fundraising drive to say, no, let's keep it open. The fundraising drive has been a phenomenal success, and yet somehow they're crossed wires or something, but the Archbishop said, well, sorry, you made a valiant effort. You should be proud of your effort, but we're closing it.
I know there's a lot of parish schools that were once open in Mobile that are closed now. St. Catherine's is on Spring Hill Avenue, closed. Up off of Holy Family was once a school attached to the church, closed. Yeah. And I know there's others as well.
What I'm urging, I'm doing it myself. I'm writing a letter to the Archbishop. Not that one letter might make that much of a difference, but I urge people in the community who care about giving educational options for underprivileged kids, especially for a school with great historic significance, having been there 120 years, please call, or even better, put in a thoughtful letter and send it to the Archdiocese. Send it to the Archdiocesan office on Government Street, and try to get the Archbishop, who I'm sure is well-intentioned, but please try to get him to change his mind. I mean, I've got no connection with the school other than I went to one of their Christmas pageants once and I was charmed. But I've known people that have gone to volunteer there, and they all speak highly of it. It's got a great reputation. Why not keep it alive?
How had this school been funded previously? Now that we're talking about this fundraising and huge donations coming in from as far as Canada, energy.
Yeah, huge. I mean, this is one of the most successful fundraising drives in a short time for this kind of cause that I've ever seen in my life. I don't know exactly how it was funded. I have not been on the board. I have not been involved with it other than gave one little donation, I think several years ago, and then I've just followed up with another. But so maybe Carlos Finley might get on, or you might ask General Cooper, or some of the other alums. I'm not exactly sure how it has been funded. I know that they have put together a wonderful plan to fund it going forward, and that it looks like a success.
Well, that's a very important piece, obviously, to have that plan moving forward.
Yeah, sustainability plan, right?
That's what I was wondering. How can they keep this up? Great info there, Quinn, and I know a lot of people are rooting for the Heart of Mary School around here for sure.
You know, such great history, and almost a who's who.
You said 120 years old?
That's amazing.
That's wild.
And again, in a community that has historically been of much lower economic status.
Yeah.
This is really, I mean, if there's ever somebody or an institution living out the expression doing the Lord's work, this is.
You know, I think General Cooper, who I've met, he went on to, think about this, Dalton. From this little Catholic school in Mobile, he went on to get a degree at Notre Dame.
Got a degree at Notre Dame, became the very first, I think I'm right in saying this, the very first African-American general in the Marine Corps.
I believe so.
That's something else.
Just a wonderful man, and there are lots of other distinguished alums of this tiny little school. It's wonderful, and it should not close.
Well said there, Quinn. Let's talk about another national story that's taking up a lot of the oxygen on national media when they're not talking about the war in Eastern Europe or COVID, which seems to have gone away. This Supreme Court, nomination process where Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson has been yesterday started answering questions from other senators who are, trying to decide whether they want to confirm her or not. And it seems like Senator Josh Hawley has grabbed the spotlight as he's mentioned some of Jackson's decisions in the past where he alleges she's gone light on some child pornography cases. From what I've been reading, it seems like the response from a lot of Democrats who want to have her confirmed is, well, a lot of judges are doing those same sentencing for sexual predators, and she's just doing what everyone else does. What do you think so far of this nomination process and some of those claims?
Okay. I'm sort of in the middle in terms of these particular claims, and because you do need to put it in context. And Andrew McCarthy with National Review, he's the prosecutor who brought down the blind, I think it was the blind sheik, you know, he put him behind bars. He is known as a very tough on crime guy, but he has criticized Hawley because he does say that Hawley is not putting this into context, and that in a lot of cases there's good reason to go below the statute, the sentencing commission's recommendations, and it all gets very complicated. But basically, a lot of the language for the laws on this and on sentencing commission were pre-internet, and so it's a lot easier to sort of break the law by receiving stuff on your computer once or twice and not being a real predator, and still the technical minimum might be 10 years and you've done something stupid for 2 weeks and not actually gone and distributed or whatever. So there's a lot of context here, and most people that are expert in the subject say that the sentencing guidelines need to be redrawn. But here's where I do agree with Hawley. The sentencing commission said that because of the internet and because of new things we've learned, et cetera, that the guidelines should be made more flexible in both directions. That in some cases the guidelines are too strict, but in other cases they are too lenient. And Hawley has a point that Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson has only gone in the leniency direction. There has never been, you would think that in 14 cases as a judge involving this, that at least one of them she would have said, oh, these guidelines are not strict enough and let me give a harsher penalty.
Yeah.
No. All of them, she either gave the legal, by law, minimum, or she went well below the sentencing guidelines.
Right.
And if you put that in the light of her long career as a public defender and going back to a paper that she wrote at Harvard, now, I'm not a believer that something you wrote in college should disqualify you from the Supreme Court. But if something that you write in college then continues consistently to guide your career, and it's sort of a philosophical legal statement, then maybe you look to this and say, what is driving her? And what she wrote in college is that she thinks that those sex offender registries in a lot of cases should not exist. You know, the things that tell the community that there is a sex offender in their midst, that names the sex offender to make it easier in case he starts to misbehave again, they can be in the lookout. Now, most people think that's a very important safeguard for the community.
Quinn, we've got to take a little break here real quick. I know we want to touch on Ukraine, and we'll do that on the way next. Quinn Hillier with Dan and Dalton, 820 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:25. That means we've got 5 minutes left with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner.
And plenty of topics to discuss with Quinn. We were discussing the Supreme Court nomination process for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, which I believe began yesterday. And one of the main comments you're seeing from a lot of people are how this nomination process would be different than the Brett Kavanaugh process. And Ted Cruz yesterday made a big point about how the Republicans would not go down the same route. But Quinn, as far as partisanship in the Supreme Court, it seems like we're so far past any nomination being a straight down the middle, nonpartisan justice. I think everyone, depending on who the administration is going to be far right, or maybe not far right, but right or left, one of the two.
Well, but it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, look, if President Biden had chosen District Court Judge Michelle Childs of South Carolina. The indications were that she would have gotten, 20 to 25 of the 50 Republican votes, which would be an overwhelming overall majority for her. If Biden had chosen a Supreme Court justice, like he campaigned as sort of a moderate liberal, it would not have been this divisive. Judge Jackson, who, by the way, is, by all accounts, a very personable, wonderful woman like Ruth Bader Ginsburg in person, and who, on paper, has a lot of good qualifications. She's an impressive lady. But she is clearly to the rather extreme left of the legal community. And that's why you're going to get close to another 50-50 vote. And, I need to be sent to the corner for rambling on, but what I was saying just before the break is that it's worrisome that she seems to believe that there's something wrong with these sex offender registries that are so important to the community to make sure that somebody doesn't become a repeat offender. So anyway, that's the point I was making there. Look, she is probably going to squeak by and get confirmed, and she won't be the worst one ever on the court, but she's pretty darn liberal.
I've got 2 minutes to go here, so we got to hit on Ukraine. We're one further week into this invasion. What are your thoughts right now?
Well, the thoughts are the Ukrainians are inspiring everybody. We need to do more. We need to send those MiGs. Wesley Clark, Bill Clinton's favorite general, was on CNN yesterday saying, send the MiGs. If you can send Javelin missiles, if you can send Stinger missiles, why not send airplanes? I mean, what's the difference? You're either sending military equipment or you're not. So send the MiGs. Do anything else we can to help support the Ukrainians so they can fight for themselves. Biden is still not doing everything that he can, short of sending our own troops there, which nobody wants. But I'm talking about there are other things we can do to support. There are lots of other things on the table. I've written about some of them. Lots of other people have written about some of them. Let's do them.
You know where he writes.
That's right. QuinnHillier.com, Washington Examiner. You can search Quinn Hillier there or just read all the stuff up. And also the trilogy, right, Quinn, available on Amazon.
Mad Jones Heretic is the first one. All of them have Mad Jones in the title.
And last question before we get you out of here. How many games do the Saints win with Jameis Winston behind center next year?
Depends on who they sign and draft from here on out, but I'm saying they're probably a 10 or 11 win team.
Wow. You're giving Jameis a little...
Well, remember, they won 9 games last year with the single worst record of injuries of any team in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, that defense was solid. Thanks, Quinn. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Quinn Hillier, and you can hear him here every Tuesday. Coming up, we'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. Lots of talk on the text line about this sexual predator conversation going on with the Supreme Court nomination. We'll get to some of these texts when we get back.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Oh, I'm sorry. You've got something to say, don't you, Dalton?
I sure do. I wanted to tell you this segment brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law, based right here in Mobile. They've been doing great work for folks in this area for a long, long time and have handled hundreds of personal injury cases. They've recovered lots of money for their clients and want to put their expertise to work for you. Now, personal injuries can occur virtually anywhere and from a number of different reasons: defective products, dangerous surroundings, truck or car accidents, alcohol and drug-related injuries, maritime injuries, which are a big deal down here on the port. And at Tobias and Comer Law, they've worked all of these cases many, many times, and they're here to help you. They'll give a free consultation anytime you want to call them, 251-432-5001. That's 251-432-5001 for a free consultation. If you feel you may have a case, give Tobias and Comer Law a call. And I'm looking forward to Brian Comer. Ought to be joining us here in studio again in the next few weeks, so I'm looking forward to that. But give him a call today at Tobias and Comer Law, 251-432-5001.
You had him in studio yesterday too, right? So they've dropped on by.
Yeah, we had a little discussion, and then hopefully we'll have him here before too long, have him in studio on the morning show. And I'm not sure what we'll talk about next, but I'm sure it'll be a good one.
836 at FM Talk 1065. Some reaction on the text line that you're looking at.
A lot of people who were discussing, you know, what Josh Hawley has been saying about this Supreme Court nominee, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. And he brought up some of the cases over the years where she was seemingly light on some of these child sex abuse sentences.
Pornography?
That she gave out, yeah. And Hawley listed seven where she really took a lenient route in the sentencing. And then the pushback against him has been, of course, the constant charges of racism, which are ever... they're always there whenever you're critical of anyone.
Being... who's is that elected officials or just
I think
trolls?
It's elected officials and trolls. And Quinn mentioned it there that I guess when these standard sentences were put in place, it was in the early days of the internet, and some of these excuses that are being made that it was a lot harder to obtain the child pornography then, therefore the sentences should be harsher than they are today. I don't understand the intent to take it light on any child sex predator. And if that's the case, then they need to rework those laws and get, you know, public opinion from American citizens on how we feel child sex predators should be sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is a larger issue, is there some movement out there? Apparently there is, where people are willing to excuse some of these just disgusting people who really shouldn't be a part of our society.
Everybody's going to be part of the society. You can't just throw them off the earth. They're here. How do we deal with them?
How do we deal with them?
How do we approach them about these habits that we think are pretty disgusting?
I mean, we look at the news constantly, and there are so many stories with people who have been arrested. And it's surprising. It's not just people who are getting these images on the internet, you know, clicking on the wrong site or whatever. A lot of people that are filming it and doing all kinds of terrible, terrible things.
Yeah.
We've talked in the past about the massive human trafficking rings that involve children. I mean, look at what's happening as people cross the Ukraine border to try to get into Poland and some of these other places. They have people waiting on the other side of the border to try to steal them and traffic them.
That's amazing.
And some of the work they're doing, actually, some of these human rights or whoever's up there to try to help with so many of these people that are leaving Ukraine are doing fantastic work and dangerous work.
And work that they don't have to do.
Yeah.
They're sticking their nose in. Sean had that on yesterday.
Yeah, he had Joe Savage on again yesterday talking about someone who saved a little girl's life from being – but it's a bigger deal than I think anyone with the right mind would even expect, how many of these freaks are out there. And this whole nomination process may be something that brings that further into light. It also seems like maybe it's part of a larger movement to have lighter sentences for not specific criminals, but all criminals, as we've seen some very dangerous crimes. People are just let out for almost no reason.
Let's circle it back to what we're seeing in Mobile with the gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And citizens, people who have been arrested for murder, bonding out and killing again.
Yeah,
I mean it's unimaginable that we have so, what is it, 300 some murder trials that have yet to be processed.
Yeah,
it's COVID's got something to do with it, but not everything to do with it. And I don't have, you know, all the facts in front of me on how this would naturally work, but the lenient sentences by judges, and Mayor Sandy Stimson just came out and he blasted the judges for their lenient sentences and allowing people back out on bond, and let it be known that that is the primary
problem with the crime that we're seeing. He said, and so you're talking about, you know, the bigger picture of leaner sentences, and you're saying, you know, are we developing into a country that we really don't think we should be or who we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you do something bad, you get punished. That's the end of that. That was one of the comments on the text line. Sandy Stimson blamed it mostly on recidivism and an inability of the legal system to tackle a growing backlog of murder cases. He said, if known recidivist offenders are incarcerated, you'll see a reduction in crime. So it's kind of like what you're talking about with the sex crimes or the viewing of child pornography. There just seems to be too much light sentencing in nearly every way. We're seeing it in the sex crimes with human trafficking and things like that, and we're seeing it in violent crime. Not that sex crime is not violent, but in the violent gun crime. Right here in the city of Mobile, mm-hmm. as most metropolitan areas are seeing it right now, that's part of the problem is the sentencing.
And there's so many aspects to it also with, a lot of these are, they're out because they're waiting for their trial.
Right.
And that trial's been delayed so many times, mm-hmm. because of whatever reason you want to put behind it, COVID, the lack of enough judges around here. But then when it comes to the sentencing, that's another issue entirely. Also, and that's kind of what they're referencing here with this Judge Ketanji Jackson. Some texts we've got here. Vince said, I would like to know if any of her past lenient judgments against sex offenders ultimately resulted in the offenders repeating a sexual crime. If so, how many, and how many victims have had to suffer such tragedy that would not have had there been a more harsh sentence given? That would be a great breakdown, Vince, to see what mm-hmm. some of those criminals ended up doing afterwards. Will says, who cares how easy or difficult it is to find kid porn? The intent is there. I agree. And it's a real, you know, it's an icky conversation to have, especially when you kind of try to get into the sentencing details, like the difference in how difficult it used to be to obtain and how. But anytime you start arguing on behalf mm-hmm. of that side, mm-hmm. you're going to come off like a apologist.
Yeah, or worse.
Or worse. And I agree. Like, if the only thing I would say is if somehow someone planted it or something like that, you know, you would not want to see that person be sentenced to a harsh sentence. But if the intent was there, then absolutely. Yeah, lock them away, and lock them away for a very, very long time.
You know, we're also in trouble in the state of Alabama because of the prisons and how decrepit they are. I mean, there's so many corners to stories like this about arresting, prosecuting, sentencing. And then our prisons are so lousy. They're like historically, nationally embarrassing and worse because it's not embarrassing. It's criminal
mm-hmm.
With the Department of Justice involved.
Yeah. This texter says, fact, there's a reason most child predators are attacked or killed in prison and have to be separated, as even prisoners believe that is the lowest crime and many are victims of that as children.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of truth to that.
I get that for sure.
A whole lot of truth.
They could have been exposed. Yeah, they could have been victimized themselves as a young kid and never going to be in a forgiving mood.
And also a lot of the predators who end up in that prison were also mm-hmm. treated like that when they were children.
Yep.
It just goes on and on and on.
The old cycle.
Gene says, Trump was a pedophile, and let's not forget Roy Moore. Again, I need some facts. Just like this unnamed texter here said a while back, we got into a little back and forth here, Kavanaugh is a sex predator. And you're seeing that a lot right now also. The Democrats who are trying to come out and defend their nominee are saying, well, you just put a rapist on the court. Did you watch or read? Did you watch that nomination process? Did you read anything? This texter says, Kavanaugh is a sex predator. Said, no, he's not. This texter says, turn the channel sometime. I don't know, maybe from our I don't know. I'm on the channel.
He's probably saying, when you watch the news, when you consume
okay.
the
I wonder
news.
What channel he's talking. I don't know.
Yeah.
He said, show me the proof and stop parroting your party line. This person apparently thinks that was an original comment. They said, that was the first by me, not a parrot. I got news for you. Your whole party keeps calling Kavanaugh a sex predator, even though that trial was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
Well, I wouldn't say the whole party, but if you see the comments online, they're obviously Democrats that are doing it.
Yeah. So there you go. That's why I think we're never any illusion that the Supreme Court has been a nonpartisan, you know, straight up and down, yes or no vote. Do you believe this? Do you believe that? If we ever were at a point where that's what the Supreme Court was like, we'll never be there again. The Republicans, when they're in charge, will nominate Republicans.
It's amazing how civil it used to be. It was like baseball's opening day. It was just kind of, you know, and we always, our image, even as kids, Dalton, we talked about this, the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's the top of the top right there.
But even though it gets, the rhetoric is so heated around the Supreme Court, you look at them, and they're working with each other all the time. They all get along famously, yeah, for the most part. The farthest left justice and the farthest right justice.
Mm-hmm. They send the farthest left justice out for lunch a lot. I know that. It's a 846 FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Porcio's on the way soon. We'll preview that on the way. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. A lot of activity on the text line we'll get to. We're also going to get to Jeff Poor a little after 9 o'clock this morning. He's got Media Research Center's Dan Gaynor, 9:30. State Senator Jim McClendon is going to be on at 10:30. Bill Britt, he's a political reporter here in Alabama. And Ray Melick, also the same, 18:19 News. All on the Jeff Poor Show coming up after us.
I know you love that Bill Britt weekend show, Voice of Alabama Politics. You said you can't get enough of that show.
It's really... it's like a throwback because the set looks like it's from 1966. So it's a hard hitting throwback political show, full of wonderful people.
Hard hitting, you said.
Full of wonderful people.
Yeah, it's great.
It's like is something wrong with my TV? Do I have to adjust? Is there an adjustment here in where this looks better?
Yeah. Well,
and I don't have that adjustment.
No, you'll want to go to the store and get the most high quality TV you can get, so you can watch The Voice of Alabama Politics in high HD QLED 95-inch whatever.
You take that show to the most defined level, it looks worse. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'd rather watch it fuzzy.
Mm.
All right, so there we go. There's my little rant on that show, and I know it was a bit mean-spirited, but what the heck? I got to talk for 3 hours a day, so there's part of what I have to... That's part of what I'm thinking.
Charles in Irvington on the text line, as we've been talking about sentencing for child sex predators. I think for the second day in a row, Charles calling for firing squads and public hangings for different crimes. Yesterday, mm-hmm, we were talking about an entirely different crime, but I catch where Charles is going with this. Also, let's see here. Grant says, Alabama is in trouble with the DOJ because the quality of our prisons, yet the recidivism rate is so high. Why? That is a question beyond my pay grade, Grant. I'm not sure, you know, the sentences are relatively lenient for some folks, but... It hasn't always been that way in this state. I guess a lot of people are serving some time for, you know, there are people in prison who, when you find out what they've been spending so much time in there for, you're like, really? Whether it's old weed convictions. Yep. And now it is overblown whenever someone says our prisons are full of people who are just smoking weed. That statement is pretty incorrect.
I think you've got to, you know, if you're sitting in prison, you're probably more than likely, I think, is what I've been reading and hearing, is you've done something pretty violent, pretty bad.
But you'd think if our leaders were going to tackle you know, changing some of these sentences that have been part of the system for so long, that they would start with something other than child sex predators, as they're talking about today. This texter says, it seems as if the Democrats hate Republicans. Trump was not a pedophile. Judge Moore said he was innocent as well. People are sometimes bribed to do others' bidding. And that's some from the text line today. Dan, when you were in high school, what was your valedictorian speech at the end of your high school career? Do you remember what you talked about after you won valedictorian?
I talked about, I think y'all got it wrong. That was my opening line as the valedictorian. Like, I'm really not that person. I don't want to give you the number. The little Catholic school in New Jersey. I don't want to. There's a lot of things I will reveal in the air and say, yeah, man, I'll own it. I will not own on air my class rank out of a class of about 127.
Yeah.
It would be that no one would ever listen again.
I finished in the top quarter of my class. We had 27.
Yeah, that's
27
okay,
people in the class.
Top quarter. It's good.
Of 27. Anyway, that might be going away. Valedictorian, salutatorian. any Detourian. A school district in Colorado is doing away with those awards at their high schools. It's the Cherry Creek School District in Arapahoe County, Colorado. And they notified parents in a recent newsletter that they will no longer be awarding valedictorians. The faculty said they have found the tradition is no longer appropriate for their students. The letter read, "The practices of class rank and valedictorian status are outdated and inconsistent with what we know and believe of our students. We believe all students can learn at high levels, and learning is not a competition." So instead,
if you turn it into a competition, isn't it best for the students that want to compete at that highest level? That if you have a winner and a second place, whatever, make it a competition so students achieve even more.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
they do it in athletics.
It's like it's the participation ribbon working its way, you know, all the way into the high school levels. Here, they said instead of having the highest ranking student deliver a graduation farewell address, they will acknowledge academic achievements through various other ways, including honor roll and department and school specific award ceremonies. I wonder if this will catch on. If you'll see more and more liberal districts just completely doing away with naming a valedictorian, because, I mean, it's all about equality now, isn't it? They want the if it was your high school, they would say the 100 whoever finished 127th in your class,
easy, stop looking at me,
is just as equal as the person who, you know, never missed a school day,
right,
and did their work and studied hard and had. I don't understand how people can get over a 4.0 GPA. That one's kind of always escaped me, which is probably why I wasn't valedictorian.
Yeah, like the 4.5 guy,
yeah,
or lady. Yes.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah,
how'd
I know.
You get that? But anyway,
a lot of time after class.
Some news from Colorado. There, no more valedictorians. Is that insane?
Well, it's not insane because look, this is a big country. So if we're going to report the news from every community in this country, we're going to come across stuff like that from time to time.
You're right.
It's just like our weird news or our news of the fools. It's out there because there's so much out there, and some of it is stupid.
And I also had this story, and any of these four men in Florida probably could have won valedictorian if they would have just put their efforts that they put into stealing fuel into their high school classwork. So the Florida Department of Agriculture said that four suspects who have been arrested were busted for installing devices inside gas pumps that dropped the prices to pennies on the dollar for a gallon.
Uh-huh.
And they think this will continue happening more and more. The suspects installed sophisticated pulsators inside pumps that regulate price and fuel flow, and that sent per-gallon costs plunging to pennies and allowed pumpers to fill up for almost free. They pulled off the scheme at Circle K's in Lakeland, Florida, and Lutz, Florida. And then two of the suspects, Rogelio Lorena and Yulier Garcia Martinez, were caught March 12th topping off an oversized gas tank in Lakeland, Florida. So apparently, I don't know if this is something they like slap on the side of the
How do you apply it?
I don't know if you plug it into something there, but somehow they hacked the system, made the price pennies, and then would fill up these oversized tanks and then go and sell them on the black market.
Okay.
For a huge profit.
Sure.
And I'm sure those aren't the only four doing that across America.
I would doubt that. Right now, I mean, people are going, you know, not that far, but everybody's trying to figure out this. Like, I'm under a half a tank right now. I'm starting to shake in my boots. It's 8:59 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, and back with you tomorrow. Jeff Porcio's on the way next.